Jones versus Jones. That one I think I pronounced correctly. Jones versus Jones.
May it please the court, my name is Dave Chipman. I represent the appellant Mary Jones in this case. One of the main issues in this case is the minor child, Casey. Casey is thriving. He's doing really, really well. He's a smart kid, gets great grades. He's involved in lots of activities. Both parents described him as honest. Both described him as independent. And by all accounts, he's doing really, really well. Casey is a great kid. He's 12 years old, time of trial today. He's just turned 14. There was some testimony that Casey did a little better in school when he was in the care of his mother, Mary. The parties had joint custody from 2011 until the court ruled that father, Kurt Jones, should have sole custody in December of 2017. This child, Casey, is doing really, really well because he has a mother who loves him, who's dedicated his life to him, who has spent the time reading, going to museums, collecting rocks, doing homework with him. He's not doing well because his father makes a lot of money. He makes $294,000 a year. He's doing well because he is loved, he is cared for, and he is put in a position to excel.
And he's with each parent 1 week at a time?
Yes, Your Honor. Mm-hmm. So from 2011 until the court made its ruling, it's a week on, week off. And prior to that, Ms. Jones, Mary, had sole custody of Casey, and the father had it at the weekend. There was an incident in 2009 where Mary had a medical issue, and they discovered methamphetamine, a low dose of methamphetamine in her blood. That basically caused, you know, the father to file a modification action. They agreed to joint custody at that point in time. Mary's had, throughout since she's been a mother, Casey's had issues with maintaining employment. There's no question about that. She has maintained employment off and on. For instance, in that 2011 to 2017 period, she had a really great job, making $18 an hour for an attorney. The attorney ended up getting disbarred to no fault of her own at all. And of course, in that time, Kurt takes her back to reduce child support, going from $500 a month to $257 a month. And I think that's an important point, because what is this motivation of this case? Is it Kurt Jones? Is he so concerned about the welfare of his child? By the way, his child is doing fantastic. Or does it have everything to do with the fact that he doesn't want to pay child support to Mary? He doesn't want to give financial support to the child's mother. And the thing is, he's pretty transparent about that. You know, he's asked by his counsel, well, what made you decide to do this modification? And Kurt answers, shockingly, well, I did it because, you know, Mary wanted more child support. And I said, I didn't want to get rid of more child support, so, you know, that didn't make any sense. So I'm gonna come back and ask for full custody, because Mary's, you know, moving around and not holding the job. So why would I pay her more child support when I already pay for everything?
But she hadn't filed a modification for child support before he filed for a change of custody. It was the other way around, right?
So here's what happened, Your Honor. This was at trial. She is contacted by child support enforcement, and they say, hey, do you want to do a modification of child support? And she says, yes, I do. You know, I'm making significant less money. I was, you know, I had this great job, but I lost it. I tried to do my own paralegal business, and I would like to go back and get more child support. Mr. Jones, by the way, his drywall business has skyrocketed. He's making, you know, maybe $60,000 when they get divorced, and now in his last, you know, in 2016, he was making $294,000. Right, which meant he would have paid $1,600 in child support. And so his motive is not the best interest of his child, he's concerned about Mary as a mother. What he wants to do is protect his financial, you know, interests. And he's questioned, you know, do you think that Mary takes good physical care of Casey? And he says, yes. Yes, he does. You know, he believes that Casey is well cared for in Mary's care. And if you look at these cases, you know, and I've scoured the cases, you're not going to find a case where there's a modification of custody, where the child is thriving, the child is doing fantastic, and there's no evidence the child is not doing, you know, there's no evidence that the lifestyle of the other parent is somehow affecting them. And there's three cases I mentioned in my brief. One is Watkins v. Watkins. And that's a case where they tried to change custody with joint custody. You know, mom and dad had joint custody there in Odo County. The mother had moved in with a sex offender. The mother's son, outside of that marriage, was dangerous. He was a dangerous kid. He had serious behavioral issues. And the mother had been evicted 8 times in 6 years. She couldn't hold a job. And what did Judge Remar say in that case? He said, at the end of the day, he said, I don't find it a material change of circumstance because I don't see any harm to the children. The children are doing well. These kids are doing really well, these two kids.
And so in this case, was there a material change?
No, there's no material change. And the thing is, the court doesn't actually say there's a material change. It is changed custody. So, I mean, you must assume that they found something. But they don't identify what they find to be the material change. And so, you know, in another case, and I think it's an unpublished case before the Court of Appeals, is Posner versus Zeman. It's a 2015 case. The mother moved around all the time. She even lived with the other guy for a while. This is a paternity case, you know. And the court of appeals in that case said there's no evidence that child ever went without shelter or any showing that any of the mother's moves ever adversely affected the child. In this case, Mary did move 5 times, and she kept in the same neighborhood every time. You know, I mean, she stayed friends his friends were with Casey. You know, she was interacting with his friends. They all had great relationships, and again, she stayed in the same neighborhood. Another case is Hoynes v. Hoynes, and that's an early Court of Appeals decision, and that's a key one because the trial court found in that one that the mother's lifestyle was affecting it, or the mother's lifestyle was such that it warranted a change of material change of circumstance and modified custody to the father. And in that case, the Court of Appeals came back and said, no, absolutely not. There's not one scintilla of evidence, that's a term they use in that case, but the mother's lifestyle is in any way detrimental to this child. You know, the mother moved quite a bit. In this case, the kid didn't even go to school all the time. You know, where Casey's going to school all the time, doing fantastic. Great student. Everyone admits that he's a great student.
And wasn't there some evidence in this case that, if you would agree, Mary showed some instability? It occurred before the 2011 agreement on joint custody.
Mary does have instability in her employment in particular. You know, and then she was moving around quite a bit, but at the same time, Casey never went without shelter, mm-hmm. and there's no showing ever of a detrimental effect upon Casey.
What about the situation that she puts him, Casey, in, living with her older son, given his issues, the friends that he was having over? Can we say that's a good situation for Casey?
I'm not sure you can say it's a good situation, but I think overall that relationship was described as a close and loving relationship with Casey and his older brother. You know, and I know there were issues. There was acrimony. There's acrimony in every situation. I mean, I imagine Mr. Jones' house, there's some acrimony, you know, given the fact that one of his daughters was born prior to his now new wife's prior marriage that he's fathered. I mean, I know there's got to be some issues there. So there's acrimony in every situation. But at the end of the day is, I don't think there's ever any showing that Casey's in any type of danger. You know, it might not have been an ideal situation. But at the time of trial, he's living with Mary and Mary's daughter and Mary's granddaughter, who and her name's Allie, and Allie and Casey are about the same age, and they have a fantastic relationship. You know, and the daughter testified, and what she said, you know, was that, yeah, my mom is a great mom, and she always is working with Casey, always taking, you know, her time with Casey. She's always reading with Casey, and Casey's really doing well and thriving, you know, when he's with his mom. And at the end of the day, I think the issue came down to, you know, the fact that she moved a lot and the fact that she, you know, had a hard time holding a job. But at the end of the day, is that's not a material change of circumstance. You know, you have to actually have some kind of showing there's a detrimental effect upon the child. And Mr. Jones was not in any way doing his part. He should have been paying child support, you know, more for child support. But instead, he's trying to shirk his responsibilities in that manner. I'd like to reserve the next 30 seconds if I could, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
My name is Mark Krieger. I represent Kurt Jones, appellee in this matter. The idea that my client, who was paying 100% of all expenses for this child, all extracurricular activities, all school expenses, all clothing expenses, and who had over $5,000 due from him from his ex-wife, according to the 2011 agreement, the court found that, much to his credit, he knew the financial situation he was in, she was in, and never even asked her to pay. And then to come here and have, in front of the Court of Appeals, it alleged that he's trying to shirk his responsibility by obtaining custody of a child who is living in a chaotic environment with his mother, in which over time entropy is just exploding in the amount of chaos that is undertaking.
But your client did testify at trial that that was at least a motivation in seeking custody.
In why he decided now is the time to go was too prompt. He said, she wants more custody from me, but I'm paying for 100% of his expenses, and we're getting ready for high school. It's time to get the kid into a stable environment. That when I represent FLEs in these custody cases, my first statement normally is it was a close case. And the court found one way or the other, and under the standard of review, that there is no abuse of discretion. If it's a close case, the case gets affirmed.
You know, and the problem here is, though, it was a modification, not an initial determination of custody. So we first have to find a material change in circumstances since 2011 agreement.
Correct.
Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that.
And the court made no specific findings about that.
What the court did is list that from the time of 2011 to the time of trial, that in 2011 she had her own residence, she was living with a boyfriend, she had a job, and from that time she has essentially been homeless. She's been living in the basements of friends or living with her adult daughter once, her adult son once, her adult daughter again at the time of trial. She's been evicted twice. She's had six jobs. She was essentially unemployed from 2014 to 2017 under the court standards. She took my client's address and Social Security number and got a cell phone for $1,400 and ran up $1,400 of charges. She took $2,000 from an 80-year-old man at a law office to catch up on rent. She had not paid for any school lunches for years. She had paid for no medical bills of his. She didn't have a vehicle. She got money from my client to agree to put the child in a new school. I want to move him to Cabot. It's in our neighborhood. There are a lot of good sports programs there. Her response is $900. This is, the court must, on appeal, that in this case, there are really no undisputed material substantial facts. She admitted in her testimony to all of this chaos in her life. Was it a good environment to put her son in the home of her 24-year-old alcoholic, depressed son with his hoodlum friends and a garage full of stolen shotguns and golf clubs, with bullets flying through and lodging on the head of the bed? That would distinguish this case from Hoynes. This case is a chaotic situation that never gets better.
Is there evidence presented about the situation prior to the agreement in 2011?
As to what the status was, there was that she was living with her boyfriend. She had had a stable
job. So she was relying on other people for assistance.
Well,
at
least
time.
Part of the rent, but she was employed. That's the difference, is once she went through this period of, as she says, she's bipolar depressive, she suffers from fibromyalgia.
And that was all true before the 2011 agreement.
Correct. But its effect on her lifestyle was not there. She had her own place. Now she is entirely reliant on other people.
Wasn't there also evidence that she has had financial difficulties since the initial proceedings? She's filed bankruptcy several times. She's been sued by creditors. That happened before 2011 as well, didn't it?
Right, but that did not, at that time, up until 2011, there's no evidence in the record that it impacted the chaos that which her home life is. And that is the stability that the court found, which is eventually, as a district court, you say, enough is enough. And we cannot subject this child going into high school.
Well, the question is a material change in circumstances affecting the best interest of the child.
Correct.
This kid's doing great. I mean, where's the evidence that he's being adversely affected by this?
I'm going to address this two parts. First of all, because the child can overcome one half of his upbringing from what is a stable environment and every other week spending it in a chaotic environment is a credit to him. The fact that his mother won't make him take his medication because he's 12 and I'm not going to babysit him, can't tell you the name of the medication that he's on, an allergy medication he takes every day. She didn't even know the name of the medication. She has him dumpster diving for used cosmetics for her out behind the mall at South Point. I mean, this is not a lifestyle for a kid getting ready to go into high school that's going to be successful. And I think the court just thought, in the end, this is enough. And I don't believe that it takes a physics major to figure out that if I'm living in a completely chaotic environment with different people I'm living with terrible people around that are stealing stuff, that in the end, I don't think the burden or the law requires me to show that he would have gotten an A on the math test rather than a B+ to show that the circumstances of the two households do not lend itself to a child in school. I also think that if you notice, the judge says, in the end, these people have been cordial to each other throughout this process. You know, my client hasn't filed for contempt for over $6,000 of expenses. My client hasn't done anything, and he hasn't undertaken any action to her because, you know, he was married to her. And she is a sympathetic character because she is so lost. And if you meet her and you see her testify and you watch her deny it 1 second, because her initial reaction of every question in the record, if you see it, is to say, no, I didn't do that. Are you sure? Well, maybe. That's the way she deflects things. And when you sit and watch her testify, and why in these custody cases, the law provides that you understand that the court this appeal court, gives some deference to the fact that he saw and observed the witness. And when you get this history of this domestic disaster that is undertaking in her life, you are sitting there trying to assess whether or not there is a chance in the way she answers the questions and in her general attitude as to whether or not she's got a chance of pulling it together.
Was there evidence of, you've used the words disastrous and chaotic, was there evidence that that was the case at her daughter's house where she was living at the time of trial?
Only in that then her daughter would get evicted and she would move out to a different place, move into the basement of her friend's house.
At the time of trial, was her daughter under eviction?
At the time of trial, well, there was no evidence because she'd only lived there for 3 months. She'd just landed there. And you can only imagine what the record would reflect as to what's happened in the year that has happened, that has left. And it's not in the record. You got to base what the court saw at that time. But I think what the court saw was a trajectory that it wasn't going to get better. And this kid deserves to be the best kid he can be. He's a bright kid. If you review his testimony, you know, what he wanted was it to be over.
We'd like to keep that under seal.
Okay. You can see that this kid is going to be somebody. He's going to be successful. And the court, as the district court in these tough cases, always tries to figure out is, what can I do to ensure that we get the best kid in the end of this process, but maintain a full and complete relationship with both parents? And a 10-4 parenting time schedule during the school year and week on week off in the summer absolutely can do that. And in the end, is it an abuse of discretion? Could any reasonable court see the litany of problems and not say, This is a change from where it was in 2011, and not for the better. Thank you.
Thank you.
How much time is left?
There was, in the trial, a lot of, you know, pointed questions to try to make Mary look bad. And, but at the end of the day is, while Mary does have her set of problems, she's always been Casey's primary caregiver. She's always made sure he had all his medical needs met, and she's always been ensured that he, you know, does well in school and that he excels in school. And she's been extremely involved, volunteered at his school, you know, dedicated her life to him. All the time she wasn't working, she was spending time with him. And so at the end of the day is, you have a kid that's thriving, and he's thriving because he has an awesome mom, you know, who loves him. So.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you both.
Case is submitted. Counsel is excused, and that concludes our December panel.